Today, is your super at risk? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and problem news with a distinctively Australian flavour. And today I'm joined again by Tarek Brooker, journalist. Hi.
G'day, Martin. How are you?
Pretty good. Watching the falls in the stock market down 6% at lunchtime. And it's playing out precisely, I fear, as I expected it would.
It's quite crazy. Like, I was watching the Australian dollar against the Japanese yen, and it just went out, got absolutely smashed within about 10 seconds. It just went poof, straight down. You know, it was down almost 10% at one point. And yeah, it's really quite concerning.
Well, the US dollar is down to around 63 at the moment. Now, of course, the Reserve Bank would quite like that, because one of their strategies to try and insulate the local economy is to let the exchange rate fall, which has two effects. One is it makes imports more expensive, but it makes our exports cheaper. And then secondly, of course, we import inflation because of that, and they're looking to try and get inflation back into the economy. I'm not sure it's necessarily going to work, though, given what's going on at the moment.
No. I mean, I think at this point, it's really quite concerning to see the way that the coronavirus and the secondary effects are really starting to uncover some of these fault lines that you've been talking about in the financial system that have been there, you know, since before the global financial crisis. You know, all it's taken is this little trade war between Saudi Arabia and Russia to just absolutely, you know, smash markets. You know, the US S&P 500 was halted because it was hit so hard. You know, it may even be closed until the index opens at 1:30 a.m. tomorrow, Australian time. And it's just exposing all these problems, like, you know, the US corporate debt bubble, which you've previously covered in the past.
Well, it's very interesting, because we definitely had a medical crisis to start with, and that created a supply side issue relating specifically to inventories and to companies with trade. We discussed that last time. But what we're now seeing are the financial consequences, all of that, right? And as you say, what we're really doing is now we're seeing the cracks, which have been there for at least 12 years and probably longer, being prized open. And it's the financial crisis now that we've got. And then, blow me, Saudi Arabia comes in and essentially says, right, great time to cut the price of oil, because what they want to do, of course, is to make it uneconomic for the US to produce oil from their fracking, because they have to get at least $50 a barrel to be able to cover the costs. Saudi can do it for $10. So they are using this opportunity, the window of opportunity, to basically create some mayhem there too. And then the other point, as you touched on, and I think it's really, really important to understand, whilst the cash rates and the target rates from central banks are going down, that doesn't mean all rates are going up. So we are seeing the credit default swap rate rising, and those rates are more related to the lesser credit of a number of corporates, you know, BBB and worse. And so suddenly all those companies who issued bonds and thought they were going to get away with really low rates are suddenly finding that those rates are going up. And that's the other factor that people need to understand. So the liquidity issues in the markets are now getting tested as well. And so we are seeing pressures on the financial markets. We're seeing pressures on the stock markets. We're seeing pressures on the commodities markets. And so we have essentially all the makings, I think, of a significant and extended financial crisis. And look, I don't think that central banks, by doing QE and cutting rates further, will solve this.
No, absolutely not. I mean, since just after Christmas, a friend of mine, a family friend who my parents have known for over 30 years, contacted me about writing a report into basically just these very issues. And, you know, we started in early January talking about sort of, you know, the issues with corporate debt, the issues with demographics, you know, all these various problems that have been going on for years since the backdrop of, you know, this conventional monetary policy and all these other different things that have been supporting the system. And then the coronavirus came along, and all of a sudden, you know, this report we were writing, which was sort of, you know, had like a quite, you know, more longer time horizon of a few years, you know, if something would unfold over the next 12, 18 months, you know, maybe even 3 or 4 years, it just got accelerated. And, you know, we've just been examining the issues even within our own superannuation system in terms of, you know, the way our money is at risk and the way it's being invested in ways that perhaps, you know, we're not all that, you know, all that comfortable with.
Well, yeah, I think it is worth focusing in on superannuation because, of course, we have a forced superannuation scheme in Australia. So people are being forced to put money away. And many people will be putting money into various default schemes. And they may have some assumptions about where that money is being stored. But it's worth thinking about a few facts. We know that quite a lot of that money will be stored in overseas investments. We know that quite a lot of it will be on stock market investments in Australia. And a proportion of it will also be in bonds and those sorts of things and maybe a little bit of cash. But if you look around the various dimensions of that, almost all of those are now under pressure. And it begs the question, do you know what risks are in your superannuation? And what are the consequences of all this?
Exactly. I mean, I contacted, you know, Ron Kachowski, a financial advisor who we're co-authoring the report together. We've been sort of going through a lot of these different super funds and examining exactly sort of what the risks are for the average person. And I found one particular fund, who I won't name, but they had a roughly over 60% of the balanced fund was in equities, roughly 30% in Australian equities and about 30% in international equities. And then additionally, another 10% was in property. You know, you think, oh, property, that's not too bad. You know, okay, there might be a bit of downside here and there and everything. But it's actually in real estate, listed real estate investment trusts, which are basically, just for our audience who may not be aware, are basically a lot like shares, which during the GFC got absolutely smashed, especially in America. And that it's just something that, you know, people think of balanced, they think something conservative, you know, I've got it maybe in 30% bonds, 30% cash, 30% shares, that, you know, 10% property or something along those lines. But with almost, you know, with some funds investing over, you know, over two-thirds of people's money in what were basically growth risky assets, you know, I think a lot of people are going to have quite a bit of a shock when they open up their super fund return, or after this video they perhaps log on to their super fund and they say, oh my lord, you know, how much money have I lost already? Like, I was looking at my girlfriend's parents' super. They've been very concerned and discussing this with me. And I looked last week and one of them had already lost, you know, 3, nearly 4% of their super. And that was before even we had the big crash this morning.
Yeah, I mean, it is tricky. So, you know, I guess there's a few things to say. Generally, people will say, well, you've got to look over the long term, right? Because over the long term, there will be ups and there will be downs and there will be crashes and there will be recoveries. So if you've got 20 or 30 years or more, then maybe you shouldn't be too concerned. And maybe, you know, that strategy isn't too bad. But as you begin to get into the sort of the later stages of life and you have less run time to go before you will need to access your super, then actually that sort of risk profile that you've mentioned would not be very sensible. There's an old adage that says, as you age, the proportion of money that you should hold in conservative cash-related investment is roughly in line with your age. So by the time you get to 50 or 60, you should have 60% in those sorts of categories rather than actually in those where they could go down again, because you may not have time to effectively ride the cycle down and up again. So it is quite tricky. And look, we're not going to give financial advice. Everybody's different and, you know, there'll be different circumstances. But I think, you know, there's a few points to make. The first is people should actually understand what their superannuation is invested in. And most people don't. My surveys say a lot of people have no idea, right? Second point to make is that there will be different variants that are available, but the default one will probably be some sort of balance thing, but we'll have quite a high share exposure. And last year it did very well because prices went from a low base to a high base. This year it's perhaps looking as though it could reverse. Who knows? In 6 months' time, it may be high again. And the other factor that I always think that people forget is they're paying fees, right? And I keep reminding people that it's the fees, which, you know, can be as high as 1.5%, maybe less, actually erodes those returns year in, year out, whether it goes up or whether it goes down. And actually the superannuation system, I think, is more to support the financial system and the financial players through those commission payments, which are massive, relative to the performance and therefore the returns on individuals. And, you know, there are a lot of people, I'm probably one of them, who really question whether the whole edifice that we've created around superannuation makes any sense at all.
Well, it's interesting that, you know, when you really think about it, like you think, say, every week, 9.5% of people's pay is heading off into the superannuation system. And then you think, okay, well, another 50% of roughly 50% of that, sort of on average, you know, 47, I believe it is heading straight into the share markets. So, you know, it's just a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's like, oh, well, look at that. The share market rose. Well, of course it rose. You've got, you know, you've got hundreds of millions of dollars heading into the Aussie share market every week solely just from people just turning up to work.
Yeah. Well, it's nearly 3 trillion. Well, it might be a bit lower now, but, you know, around 3 trillion sunk in to superannuation in Australia. We've got one of the most valuable superannuation structures around the world. But certainly it doesn't necessarily always work to the interests of those who are in them. And of course, the other point to make is that there's a big difference in performance between those who've invested in the retail funds, which are run by mostly the big banks and other big financial organisations, and those in the industry funds, right? So the industry funds generally perform better. And it's worth referring back to the productivity report that came out, I think it was last year or maybe the year before now, highlighting the fact that overall, over the longer term, industry funds always seem to outperform retail funds. And then part of the reason for that was the difference in fee structures, as well as the different mix of asset classes within the superannuation fund. And I guess the other point there is, if you are putting 9.5% of your salary in religiously, that means you've got 9.5% less money to spend, right? And it doesn't mean that employers have been paying an additional 9.5%, you know, as well as pay rises. Effectively, what it means is that they'll look at it in the round, and so therefore take-home pay may well be depressed. It's been depressed for many years, as we've discussed previously. And, you know, the superannuation contribution is part of the reason why wages are not growing.
Yeah, and I just to take it back a step for a minute, you made a really, really fantastic point when you talked about asset allocations based on age. You know, like, you know, I believe it's in Sweden, as you get older, the asset allocation evolves. So you're taking less risk as you get older, and as you head towards retirement, you're taking, you know, much, much less risk. But here in Australia, if you're in a balanced fund and you're 19, your risk profile is exactly the same as if you're 64 and you're 9 months away from retiring. And I think that's a really, really big issue that we have here, because, you know, I saw a chart on Twitter the other day that someone posted, and in between the year 2000 and the year 2012, if you bought the S&P 500, your money went nowhere over 12 years. So if you're approaching retirement, if you're, you know, sort of like 5-10 years out from retirement, and we do have another big blow up, another GFC, you know, you might not have time for your money to recover, for your wealth to recover. And I think that's really quite wrong. I want a better word, but it's a little bit wrong, because, you know, you hear from these people, you know, like financial advisors, you know, I've even heard from some of them via email recently, who've said to me, no, you know, everything's going to be fine. You know, this is just like SARS, you know, we're going to see a recovery, and it's not being as actively managed as perhaps people would think. You know, people think, oh, but if my super is being hammered, you know, shouldn't people be doing something about that? And the answer is, unfortunately, as we saw during the GFC, for the most part, no.
Mm. Well, the other point there, of course, is a lot of people are investing in index funds, right? So basically they are holding a portfolio that mirrors the indices. So as the indices go up, they go up. And once they go down, they go down. So there isn't a lot of intelligence often behind those funds. And so go back to my point, what are we paying for? You know, what are those fees actually going to? Not surprisingly, therefore, quite a few people have said, well, actually, I want to manage it myself. And so the rise of self-managed super funds has, you know, been one of the big sort of cornerstones of the superannuation system in Australia. And my surveys tell me that people go into self-managed super funds partly because they feel they've got more control and more transparency. Secondly, their returns may not be quite as good, you know, in a good year, but actually in a bad year, they're often a lot better. And thirdly, the flexibility is just there where it's not there within the existing structural approaches within superannuation. So it's quite interesting to see that. And of course, the superannuation industry keeps throwing rocks at the self-managed super fund sector. And even some of those in government believe that self-managed super funds should not be allowed to happen.
Oh, no, absolutely. And I think that's a really important point. You know, you're seeing all these additional regulations around self-managed super funds cropping up relatively consistently. And don't get me wrong, some of them are much needed changes. You know, say, for example, not being able to leverage your self-managed super fund to buy a property, which is, you know, I think a very, very good development. Lobby, you know, there's the issue that lobbyists lobby on behalf of the superannuation industry, on behalf of the finance industry, and then they turn around and then they say, oh, no, only we can do this. People aren't capable of managing this themselves or with their accountants or with their, you know, individual financial advisors. We need to be doing it. And, I mean, it's fairly obvious why, considering, you know, at this point, the fees collected by the superannuation industry are roughly on par, I believe, with the entire Australian defence budget.
Yeah, well, that's quite right. And it just gives you a bit of perspective. I guess my final point on this would be, of course, the other asset is property, right? So a lot of people also have equity in property because property values have accelerated in recent years. Now, we don't know whether, in fact, as the this financial crisis plays out, whether, in fact, the stock markets and everything else goes down and people will pour into property even more, or whether we will actually see property prices also beginning to slide. And as you may know, one of my scenarios suggests that in this sort of crisis, this is typically when you do get property price corrections too. So it may well be that even property is not necessarily that secure in the current environment. And that, I think, is going to be a big shock for many people.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's what really needs to be rammed home at this point is that all bets are off. I mean, even Christopher Joyce said in his debate with John Adams, if we see a recession, all bets are off. And that's exactly where we are at the moment. You know, this is deteriorating so much faster than anyone expected. You know, I mean, if you had said a few weeks ago that you'd see the S&P 500, you know, trading halted at this time of day, you would have said, no way, not going to happen. But here we are, you know, the global bond market is bubbling, you know, like you say, CDS rates, which is, you know, sort of the, in effect, you know, in simple terms, borrowing costs, you know, exploding for all these various different companies. And this virus is just represents perhaps what is just a catalyst for all these different bubbles and cracks in the system that have been there for so long.
Well, in a way, you know, we always knew that there were issues, and a lot of those have been papered over for a long, long time. But now we've got so many different negatives all working at the same time, so it's perhaps not too surprising. And look, it may well be that markets ultimately calm down a bit. But the problem that I see, Tariq, is that we don't know for how long the virus is going to continue. We don't know how long the supply chains will be disrupted. We don't know how many small businesses in Australia will end up going out of business simply because they've not been able to sell their goods and services. And we don't know how many people who have been relying on their income to pay those mortgages and, you know, keep their head above water suddenly find that they're no longer there. And, you know, my surveys, again, I've just published this today, about 25% of households live from 1 month to the next, they have no savings of any sort whatsoever. And so it doesn't take very long for things to go terribly, terribly wrong. So, you know, let's hope we're wrong, and let's hope that things do turn around a bit. But I think people do need to take some precautions. But one of the pieces of advice would be, it's worth understanding the formulation of your superannuation fund.
No, absolutely. You know, I mean, at this point, it can't hurt to look at your household balance sheet, to look at your super, to look at all these different things, you know, because we don't know what's coming here in Australia. We don't know if we're going to end up like Northern Italy with quarantines, or whether we're going to, you know, whether we're just going to end up in a global recession or something. You know, some people are even predicting something worse than that. So it's definitely really, really important to just have a look at where you're at within yourself, you know, within your own household, within your own super, to just look at all these different things, because as you say, there are so many unknowns, and no one knows what's going to happen a week from now, let alone a year from now.
Yeah, and you know, the property spookers were out this morning. I was watching, and basically they're saying, look, the financial markets are down, stock markets are down, but property will always save you. And I'm thinking, I am not so sure. So I would also be very, very cautious when it comes to making any decisions in the current environment with regard to any property transactions.
Absolutely, 100%. I mean, it's all and good for them to look back on the CoreLogic Index and this explosive growth that it's shown since the May election last year. But at the end of the day, we're heading into a completely different world. It's all well and good to say, oh, this is what we projected, you know, on the 15th of January, you know, before the coronavirus. But at the end of the day, all those forecasts are torn up and thrown out the window. You know, you've got all these various different people. I mean, like, I think it was JP Morgan this morning saying that the S&P 500 might end up down 35%. And, you know, like these explosions in junk bond yields and all these other various issues, if they come together in a bad way it comes together and it all just explodes into another financial crisis, we don't have China to drag us out this time. It's not going to be the same as last time. Maybe somehow things aren't as bad here as the rest of the world, but it doesn't mean that property is a safe bet, because we have no idea what's going to happen.
Yeah, and remember this, that last time around, they cut interest rates by 400 basis points or 4%, right? Today, interest rates in Australia are at 0.5%. So we don't have the latitude to be able to take rates into deep negative territory unless you play the negative interest rate game. I did a post on that the other day, but there are all sorts of risks attached to that. And so effectively, central banks around the world are pretty much out of ammo. And that takes us into, I think, reasonably uncharted territory. I think we'll have to come back to this again, Tarek, because I think, as we said, was it last week or the week before, things are moving blooming quick. So we should pick it up again next week, by which time the world will have changed once again.
Yeah, too right, mate. Definitely. Looking forward to it.
Thanks for your time today. Appreciate it. So there you have it. A very important perspective from Tarek. And look, there is a level of uncertainty which is pretty unprecedented. What I would say is don't panic. But it's worth finding out, getting some information so that you can make good decisions going forward. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.